You're listening to Podcast on Fire. It's Asian cinema in a podcast with your hosts, the magnificent trio of Stu, Ken, and Mike.
And welcome to Podcast on Fire, episode 40. Yes, well, I'm your host, Stuart Sutherland. Joining me this evening, we have Ken.
Hey.
And we have Mike.
Right.
What's the actual words hidden in that one?
Is it me, or does Easter egg chocolate taste better than regular chocolate?
Well, I think if you eat too much Easter egg chocolate, then you kind of regret it because you feel ill.
True.
This has been a public service announcement from Podcast on Fire.
So, coming up on tonight's show, we're going to be discussing the Hong Kong Film Awards and have a banter about how our appreciation for films have changed over the years. So, starting off the show, we're going to discuss last movies watched. So, Ken?
Okay, I finally reached my actual original DVD pile of the months of watching stuff I've gotten for free that's been on DVD-R, CD-R and stuff. So, I pulled out one of these DVDs that Fusion released of these old-timey Taiwan swordplay movies that they unearthed when they found a bunch of old-timey cinema prints. These were movies divided between Crash and Fusion on DVD, sold really bad. So, you know, if they're still out there, go get them cheaply if you're interested in these kind of old films. Many unknown, but I watched The King of Kings. Unknown up until it was released, obviously, but the director, Joseph Kuo, is not unknown. Joseph Kuo, sort of Taiwan's independent martial arts master, I guess, because he was one of the most known people doing independent martial arts movies in Taiwan. Seven Grandmasters, Mystery of Chess Boxing, which has the aka Ninja Checkmate, as we've discussed before. Very good. Those were kind of hokey. Shot outdoors kind of films, no real drama to it. But King of Kings, 1969, this is quite welcome because it's Joseph Kuo showing that he can provide, you know, substance within this swordplay drama, which it is. And it's basic storytelling, partially crude filmmaking, but it actually has crude emotional impact, and that actually is equal to actual emotional impact, obviously. So the very generic story is the two children witness their father being killed by the swordsman known as Thunder Sword after the father has just been appointed the escort for the emperor. And these children are separated as young, and we cut to when the male of the kids is now an adult, and he wants revenge, obviously. So he's become known as the man killer in the Wuxia world. He's basically trying to find Thunder Sword, and along the way, just killing very uncontrollably, trying to find Thunder Sword. And when he meets up with an old blacksmith, this blacksmith sees this kind of uncontrollable anger in this young man, and he wants to teach him to stop spilling blood, basically. And this drama is about, you know, the dual nature to someone who's driven by revenge and driven by blood, but also has like his ear open to, he knows that what he's doing is sort of wrong, but he can't help being that driven. So it's actually very, very seriously made, and has one of those twists in the plot that you can spot a mile off just because you've seen like 100 of these movies with the same kind of plot. It's still, even today, when you make like movies that are familiar, if you pull off, you know, cliches and generic content, you rise above cliches and generic content. And this 1969 movie, King of Kings, very much does. And not for all audiences. I mean, the acting and the sort of the directing on display is very theatrical, which you can see in many swordplay movies. It almost feels like, you know, stage acting, sometimes when people go into monologues. But it's good drama and surprisingly fluid and exciting swordplay, which is made all the better because the context for these fights, story context is works. So the story and the fights sort of meet up, and this I think should be one of the gems that was unearthed by Crash and Fusion. And for fans of Joseph Quo, go back to this one. He knew a thing or two about a thing or two. Did you pick up any of those DVDs, Mike?
I've got some of the Crash Masters, which came out around about the same time, knocking about, but I haven't actually got any of the Fusion films.
Right.
I know they're very cheap.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, $3 for some of the DVDs on HK Flix and stuff like that. But bear in mind, if people are curious, these are anamorphic widescreen transfers most of the time, but they're taken from cinema prints, quite faded, and have the burned-in subtitles, so I'm very much used to that myself. These were never meant to be like Hong Kong Legends-style collector's editions, you know what I mean? What do you think of Joseph Quo, Stu, and Mike? I'm guessing Mike has encountered him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm not too familiar with his work. If I looked him up and looked through the titles he's directed, I probably came across one or two of them, but it's definitely a prominent name amongst the old school swordplay movies. Because was it not him that done the Seven Grandmasters and films along those lines?
Yeah, exactly. And Mystery of Chess Boxing obviously has its characters and dialogue and stuff has traveled to the Wu-Tang Clan. Even taking character names from that movie to making them their name as artists and stuff like that. So,
Mike.
I like quite a lot of Joseph Quo films. When I did the film screenings in 2007, we showed Mystery of Chess Boxing, a wide original language subtitle version, which you just can't get on DVD, apart from a dodgy bootleg.
Mm-hmm.
And that went down brilliantly for the crowd, especially the ending, which is just mental. The end of Mystery Chess Boxing is craziness.
Jack Long and Mark Long, which are incredibly fun to see. Very, especially Jack Long is an incredible acrobatic guy. Maybe not in the same division as Yung Biu and Yung Wai, but it's incredibly fun to see him flip the screen. He always plays... He got to play the old master in some films. So it was kind of, you're that character now, whenever we do a film. And, and same with Mark Long, after he played Ghostface Killer. He looks exactly the same in like World of Drunken Master, where he just appears in the final scene without any context whatsoever. So it's like, oh, what are we going to do? How are we going to spice it up?
Mm-hmm.
Ah, fuck yes, bring in Mark Long!
Ah, well, after hearing a quick peek at the filmography, there was one film that I did own at one point, and it is the infamous 36 Deadly Styles.
Oh yeah.
Which I think some people may quote as 36 Deadly Hairstyles, because I think the film is quite memorable for like Wang Jin Lee's weird do, as well as Bolo with dreadlocks.
It's a late 70s Quo, mostly. That's the era that people are most familiar with. He also did a lot of moves with Carter Wong, which didn't do him any favors, because Carter Wong on his own carrying a film is rarely a good idea, because he's not leading man material. You know, look at the Eight Masters or the Bronze Man films and stuff like that, but fun enough.
Yeah.
Born Invincible is a classic as well.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I haven't seen that, so...
Carter Wong's the villain, that's the using his Tai Chi skills, as it says in the English dub. Unfortunately, being a master means his hair goes white and he talks in a high-pitched voice, which I know in the dub a lot of people find very irritating.
Who's the hero lead in that film, though?
I'm tempted to say Mark Long. Really? You know what happens in that film? You haven't seen Born Invincible?
Nope.
Yeah, what I love about that film is you've got a host of baddies. Carter Wong's the main one, but Law Leap's also in there as a baddie and loads of other people. But it's basically this one school getting picked on and then trying to get revenge, but each person that tries to get revenge or train up or ends up just getting fucked up by Carter Wong. And this just basically happens continuously until somebody at the end wins.
I can see him more in a villain role, to be honest, because he's obviously, you know, this big bulky guy. But as a hero, and especially in the Eight Masters, which I saw recently, just, you know, a 15-minute too long melodramatic movie, you know, where Carter Wong is called upon to act dramatically, which, you know, melodrama in kung fu movies is not necessarily the most exciting thing. And yeah, but I still have a weak thing for Joseph Kwo films. It's a comforting thing sometimes. It's easygoing, and it's not, even if it's success, it's not the most grave offense towards me as a viewer. It's like, you know, I can be more mad about other movies, other filmmakers sucking ass.
No, I think it definitely in the indie scene, he was probably one of the masters of just low budget, kind of, you know, honest, fun action films.
Mm-hmm. I think the best I've seen is Seven Grandmasters, which is just a spot on, you know, action throughout. I mean, I can't remember any bad action scene. And I remember thankfully, this got one of the very best DVD releases of an old school indie flick, Seven Grandmasters. I think it was Media Blasters and or Tokyo Shock did a DVD a few years ago. You know, the widescreen print, subtitles, original dub, and just incredibly fun film. And one of the best fight scenes in that is between Jack Long and the Corey Yun. A weapons fight, I believe, was just mesmerizing. So if people just wanted to try out one Joseph Kwo film, my personal recommendation is Seven Grandmasters, because it's an easy flick to appreciate. And Mystery of Chess Boxing is alright. You know, it can be a trek to get through some of the comedy, but especially like when Simon Yun's supporting character in Mystery of Chess Boxing, where he's the cook in the school who teaches Lee Min some martial art foundation, I guess. It's kind of a fun little subplot in the film.
I'll look into writing some of his stuff. It does look quite fun. So, Mike, have you been watching any movies recently?
Yes, Stuart, I have.
Awesome.
Well, like Kenneth, I was also watching a bit of old school kung fu. It would seem, unlike Ken's film, mine has the depth of a puddle of dog piss. I watched The Dragon Lives Again. Which is a piece of, as Ken's reaction would tell you, a classic.
Well, I didn't like it.
Exploitation cinema, or more specifically, Bruceploitation, as it stars Bruce Leung as Bruce Lee. And so the film picks up directly after Bruce has died. And he's currently lying in what one would assume is his heaven, as he's threatened with hell, being sent to hell a bit later, so he's clearly in heaven. Heaven looks incredibly like a really cheap independent kung fu film set.
Or is it hell?
And he instantly pisses off the and worries the king of the underworld. And instantly has all the women there wanting to hump his brains out. Now, in it, a group of bad boy assassins that work for him and they include James Bond and Clint Eastwood's The Man With No Name, Zatoichi, Dracula, and The Exorcist.
Fire.
Then on Bruce's side, he's got the One-Armed Swordsman, Kane from Kung Fu TV series, which is a bit ironic, and best of all, Eric Tsang as Popeye.
I remember this one now.
Yep, this film is batshit crazy. It's also got Simon Yoon in it as well. Ken just mentioned. It's... Oh, I don't know what to say about it. Oh, well,
can you really critique this film, Mike? To be honest, I mean, I'm sure you're going to say it's dog shit and I don't want to see this again and Ken is crazy for liking it, but can you really critique a movie that is just so over the top crazy? You remember the caption at the start of the film? I think it says, you know, dedicated to the millions
of
fans.
The film is dedicated to millions who love Bruce Lee.
And look at us, we're going to fuck with your brain and fuck with the respect of Bruce Lee. Ha ha!
It's amazing. Emmanuel's in it as well, I forgot to mention.
Oh, Lord.
Her sole purpose is to fuck people to death. That's her assassin skill. I mean, personally, I could think of more efficient ways to kill somebody rather than humping them for an hour until their heart gives out, but... Ken's right, it is a difficult film to critique. Because it's almost so ridiculous, it's kind of, you know, spoofing itself at the same time. It doesn't make any sense whatsoever. It makes me think of that it plays out like it's Bruce, one of Bruce Lee's dreams. You know, so he's gone to sleep, and in his dream he's woken up and he's actually died, but you know, all the chicks talk about how big his cock is and want to ride him. Half the people want to batter him, but he ends up whooping them really easily. And then the others, all fictional characters, of course, you know, not even real people that have died, fictional characters that are dead, kind of look up to him and want him to teach them how to beat ass with the nunchucks and stuff. And he ends up whooping them all and, you know, winning the day. It is just crazy.
You know, you draw a line to... the actual critique you can hurl towards a movie like Dragon to Bruce Lee's story, and obviously these are so far apart, but you know, that's a hokey film with a lot of made up stuff that, you know, almost approaches Dragon Lips again, you know, albeit in a slight way, so, but that you can critique.
Well, that's because Dragon the Bruce Lee story is trying. It's trying to be a drama, it's trying to be, you know, it comes across as melodrama, it's trying to make some kind of points about tolerance and all kinds of things like that. Dragon Lives, again, is not. It's not trying to make any point at all. It's not trying to teach you anything. It's not trying to share any ideas with you. It's just Bruce Lee in some really fucked up kind of purgatory, hell, heaven, afterlife, beating the crap out of some famous fictional characters.
And this is where an interesting thing enters, that you, the mind of the individual viewer. So I personally think, despite it being very low budget and obviously poorly made and not a good film, but I would argue that it's creative filmmaking in a sense, because you don't do this automatically. You know, not every director can, you know, make a movie that have people say, wow, that was insane. And you know, it's something that is translated as sort of creativity, and I think it's, you know, I dare say skill as well, but that's coming from me as you know, I like exploitation movies, like hokey movies, so I'm willing to praise a movie like this in a way. But I don't know how you are in that way, Mike, if you can look past, you know, the badness sort of.
Well, I think there's one way to definitely look at it, which is, one, it's original, and two, well, kind of tied to the originality, you know, it shows creativity and imagination. Because, you know, you read it and think, Bruce Lee and Popeye versus Dracula. You know, it's not the first thing you'd put together. So it shows a certain level of kind of, it can get you going, especially if you're an exploitation fan. this kind of shit is what gets you boners. It's like reading about a film that's got, you know, zombie samurais in space.
Yeah, all the elements combined. I mean, not every film combined this many elements as well. Someone may have thought, maybe Bruce Lee and one-armed swordsman. Maybe. But no one thought of adding like the 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 other, you know, established movie characters in one film.
I think it's definitely running you hear it a lot from quite a lot of films, and it's not usually true, I don't find, but a definite so bad it's good kind of movie.
Mm-hmm.
It is crazy. It is stupid. It is a bit poorly executed. The dubbing is pretty piss poor and nonsensical half the time. But it all adds to the kind of the charm of it.
And someone knows it is kind of fun. Doing.
I'd imagine it's the kind of film that a lot of, you know, I can see people, you know, taking hits from the bong or doing some kind of, you know, down in a keg of beer and sitting with their mates, absolutely, laughing themselves into a coma.
Mm-hmm. That's the reason I'm renting it.
since you saw it recently, Mike, did they ever use the Popeye theme tune in this?
Yep.
I don't remember. Oh, they did, actually. Okay.
Yeah. There's a bit where he's being Eric Sang's in a fight with a bunch of mummies in the middle of a desert, and he's pinned to the floor or being beaten to the floor or whatever, and all of a sudden appears from nowhere a can of spinach, which he chomps on and then lazily gets up and beats him up pretty badly.
No,
and badly, I don't mean viciously, I mean bad fighting.
Should note that they didn't put any like prosthetics on Eric Tsang to make his arms look exactly like Popeye. I don't think they did anything to him.
No.
But still, he looks pretty much the part, I think. You know, it's not a bad actor to have to play Popeye.
We just need Eric Tsang. A sailor outfit, a stupid little hat, and a corncob pipe. And he's there.
It's like we discussed on the Bruce Plotation episode, that it's very easy to make someone look like Bruce Lee, the tracksuit and the glasses, and then you're there. You can be white for. Still look like Bruce Lee.
Mm-hmm.
It's a shame though that it was shame, and you know I'm glad it's out there, and I still would like to see it in. You know, if there's a widescreen version available, I would like to see that, but this very much suffices. So if you have the taste now for these kind of crazy movies, Mike, if you can look up the clones of Bruce Lee, I think you'll have another contender for the most fucked up Bruce exploitation movie ever made.
A few people have told me that already, to watch Clones of Bruce Lee. Do you know Andrew Staters?
I've heard you dance.
And martial arts illustrated and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
He writes the Jun Fan Journal, which is all about Bruce Lee and martial arts illustrated, and he's a huge Bruce Lee fan. And he keeps telling me how great Clones of Bruce Lee is. He wants to see a proper full-scale DVD release of it.
Well, I have actually. The closest thing we're ever going to get, I bought over eBay. The old Japanese English dub tape that was in full widescreen, so at least we'll have that. And this movie plays out quite good in English because John Benn is in it and clearly speaking English dialogue. So John Benn of Way of the Dragon fame, he plays the scientist. The clones of Bruce Lee. Bruce Lee 1, Bruce Lee 2, Bruce Lee 3. So I think you're quite prepared now, Mike, to take on the films of Bruce Lee, and I'm glad you looked at it, Dragon Lives Again, the way you did. A good assessment of it.
Thank you. Well, you know, the thing about films is that they're essentially entertainment. That's what they're there for.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I was entertained watching Dragon Lives Again, so I can't give it a negative review.
And it's fun also because going back to Dragon Bruce Lee story, that's the kind of thing you can get offended by. because you know, as we said, it's trying to be to base it on his life. But for the Bruceploitation movies, most of them, close to all of them, maybe it's really hard to be offended, especially when you know when you do this. Hardly connected to Bruce Lee's life, aside from the fact that he died.
Well, you know, if Dragon and the Bruce Lee story had thrown in Popeye and Dracula and stuff, I probably would have cut it a lot of slack and enjoyed it.
And Rob Cohen would be our hero forever.
Right, so...
I'm by the way looking forward to Stu's assessment of the film.
Oh yeah, I'm sure it'll be fun.
Are you actually going to watch it, Stu?
Yeah, I've got it on the rental list.
Oh, nice.
So I'll make it a point where I'll get everyone around and get a big old lot of beer.
From the co-star of the Kung Fu Hustle.
I'm not going to spoil anything. I'm sure Ken won't either, Stu, but you've got to watch out for how Bruce dispatches Dracula.
Okay.
He's a genius. And I guarantee you won't see it coming.
Right. No, I was going to take a guess, but no. No. I'll just save it. All I thought there is, like, Bruce Lee kills Dracula by staking him with his rigor mortis cock. No?
You sort of. You're not far off.
Holy shit. Right, tell me no more. Right, so for me, last night I sat up and rewatched one of my old favourite films, Mr. Vampire, Part 2. To many, I think this is the Mr. Vampire that's most don't actually like, because it actually has quite a large melodramatic side plot.
I haven't actually seen it.
What was Ken's opinion there?
It's just shit and boring and not funny at all, but do go on.
Okay. For me, for those that I haven't actually seen Mr. Vampire 2, this one takes place, well, this one's set in modern day, where a group led by Chung Fat, who's, to me, I think this is probably one of his best performances from what I've seen. Like, he plays a really great character. He's, I find it's a really hard what to determine what this group is. It's Chung Fat's kind of look like maybe some sort of archaeologist, or maybe some scientist in a way. And he has Billy Lau and Curry, as his sort of sidekicks who do all the dirty work for him. Like, they troll a bit of these caves and come across a family of Chinese vampires that have just been left there undisturbed for all this time. So they're thinking, right, they're going to make some great money out of this, take them back. And from the family, it's obviously a mother and a father, and they actually have the small child vampire as well. And all this, let's see, there's a point where they're trying to prove that they've really got these champais. Chinese vampires, so they take the child one to show off to, I think it was going to be Stanley Fung's character, but he makes an appearance later in the movie. But the child escapes, and Billy Lau can't help himself by just removing the incantations from the forehead, like reviving the vampires. So hilarity ensues there. Half an hour later on into the movie, we finally get introduced to the character of Lam Ching Ying. And Lam Ching Ying, as you expect, he is basically a modern-day version of a Taoist priest. He works in sort of like in a Chinese medicine shop. And he's got, who you'd put in as basically a son-in-law, who's Yin Biu, who's a reporter. And he's dying just to get like the perfect fold, become famous. He's dating Lam Ching Ying's daughter, Moon Li, who has a short appearance in the film. Well, I would say more of a supporting role. And it just gets to the point where Stuart can't be bothered talking about this because he just actually ruins the plot for everyone.
It's the usual suspects, for fuck's sake.
It should really just get to the point where I just copy and paste it from IMDb and read it out. But, yeah, I find this movie to be just great. It's got basically the three stories to it. The ones where it's Lam Ching Ying and Yin Bu trying to stop the vampires. The one with Chung Fat where they've discovered the vampires and they're trying to sell them for money. And the subplot of the child vampire being taken in by two young kids whose father's Wu Feng. And basically what they're... The daughter mistakes the Chinese vampire for an illegal immigrant. So they just treat it. They're just trying to help it blend in, this, that, and the next thing. Then it cuts to, like, the cheesy 80s montage of where they're going about the park, or they're on an open-top bus, and...
Raindrops keep falling.
Or a shot where they're all on swings at the same time. Or the little vampire knocking down a bully and, like, using his vampire powers to, like, wheeze in his drawers. But to me, it is... I find all that stuff heartwarming. I think that's just perfect, hokey 80s melodrama, basically. And then when it cuts back to the more serious side of it, where Lam Chi Ying and Yin Bu's trying to stop the Chinese vampires, and Billy Lau, who like receives like a bite at the start of the movie from one of the vampires, he's trying to find the cure. Chung Fat wants them back. And it comes to this great scene where they're basically stopped by the police. Yin Bu and Lam Chi Ying steal a van with vampires in it, with Billy Lau and Kali Curry in the back, and they're trying to like bring the vampires back to life so they could soften the skin and get blood to cure Billy Lau. And of course Lam Chi Ying and Yin Bu want to burn them, and it brings in a great cameo from it's James Tien. And it's just the way the music and all the stuff that happens in the scene, that's just so fucking cool. Just Lam Chi Ying wipes him out, does this, that, and the next thing. And the music, I think the music does really well, because it becomes like a chaotic scene where there's crowds everywhere, and there's fire explosions, vampires flying about. And I just can't help but sit there and get goosebumps on the back of my neck, all the hairs go up. It's just, every time I watch it, this film is just awesome.
And you think it sucks ball bags, Ken?
Well, it's tedious for
just
me.
Just say yes.
Okay. But I have to say this, that there are... I like it because it tried something different as a sequel. You know, they tried to not go into the footsteps of Mr. Vampire. And there's certainly concepts here that can be made to work. Ejecting Lam Ching Ying from like the first half of the movie, the first third, is sort of a, you know, you're shocked by that. But Chung Fa is, you know, he's not a bad substitute, even though he's not a Taoist priest. And but I really never, for me, it never really caught fire as much as it did for used to.
Mm-hmm.
But I have to say that the scene, the slow motion fight in a room filled with this sedative smoke,
yeah.
I guess, it's quite a creative scene, even though. Kind of like that, but it never really took off for me. I guess that's the thing. But it's one of those Hong Kong 80s movies that I'll happily rewatch in a way, because it's easy. It's easy to watch it. It's a strange thing with 80s Hong Kong cinema that it's kind of like that.
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember the subtitle at the end, which one was one of those in jokes where they mentioned like a lot of like Sammo movies in one sentence?
Yes, yeah. That film has one of the best in movie references at the time, I think. Where Yin Bu's trying to talk up his seafood to the police officer, James Tien. He's like, I don't even know this guy. He's like, you don't know him? He's like, tell him. And he's like, my master Samo like had spooky encounters. Then he met the dead and the deadly. He's like, last year I met Mr. Vampire. I'm Lin Ching Ying. And they're like, who the hell's Lin Ching Ying? He's like, I don't know.
That's actually also in the English dub. Just like exactly like that, basically.
Brilliant.
Because the old Megastar DVD was actually one of their few like anamorphic DVDs that also had the English dub on it.
Just like Magic Cop.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
But for me, the series then established, you know, the pace and energy I like with Mr. Vampire 3, which I think is brilliant.
Mm-hmm.
Written and yeah.
I was back to ask you actually, which of the sequels, because I'm not usually massively keen on sequels, because you know, Law of Diminishing Returns, they're usually a bit pap, compared to the originals. If I was going to ask Stu, which is the best sequel then?
That's the thing, I like them all really on different levels. Because I like Mr. Vampire 2 because it tries something new with its melodramatic side plot, and it also included Ian Bue into the mix. The third one was great because they included Richard Doom as like a sort of con man version of the Taoist priest, and it had some great cameos and
Sam like Corio.
Yeah, and it was just a really good story along with that. And then in the fourth one, which is Mr. Vampire's Saga 4, where this one didn't actually include Lam Ching-ing. This one was Anthony Chan and Wu Ma, and which also included their students, which was Chin Ka Lok and was it Rachel Lee? Or is it Lyota Lee? Or
Loletta Lee.
Ah, that's it.
Rachel Lee, she's different, had different names.
Mm-hmm. So, like, that film was great because it just had some mad stunt, well, Chin Ka Lok tends some mad bumps in that film. And another, just like the pranks the two priests played on each other using black magic was just like goddamn fun. Yeah, I think I really just have this thing for Chinese vampire movies. No matter which one I watch, I always find them just to be so much fucking fun.
I can agree with that. And certainly Ricky Lau has been, you know, he's been in charge of the series as director, sort of made sure that, you know, that it has the room it has, and Mr. Vampire 4, you know, it's fun to see that they can eject Lam Ching Ying easily and still you know, have a connection to the Mr. Vampire series, because Anthony Chan plays the same role as he did in Mr. Vampire 1. He appears in the first scene and basically the last scene of Mr. Vampire 1, so good fun.
Yep, and when doing research like on this film for tonight, I actually came across the male actor that plays the vampire. Well, the actor that plays the male vampire in Mr. Vampire 2, is it Chung Wing Chung? Like, he should actually just be renamed as Mr. Vampire. When looking at his filmography, he played vampires in quite a lot of films. All the way, let's see, he was an extra in Mr. Vampire. He was the Hoppin' Vampire in Vampire 2. He played one of the cult members in Mr. Vampire 3. He was a vampire in Mr. Vampire 4. He was the male vampire in Spooky Encounters 2. And all the way up to today, he was in the film that you spoke about recently, Ken, The Vampire Who Admires Me, where he plays the Vampire King number 2. This is Mr.
That's
Vampire.
Amazing. That's amazing. It's not like it's a stunt man. It seems like I'm gone. Yeah, I'll do it.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll do it again. Please let me do it again.
I know. It's just one of these great little things I just came across. Like, how cool.
It's like, I think Yuen Wah played
in the original.
The first Mr. Vampire, and in Mr. Vampire 4, I think people have identified him in those movies. Yeah, that makes me happy. The Vampire Who Admires Me is a bad film, but, you know. Wow.
So, yeah, I definitely recommend Mr. Vampire 2, but I think it's actually getting to the point where the Deltamac DVD might be out of print, but I'm guessing this might be something Joy Sales would have done by now.
I think they have, yeah, already. By the way, you didn't mention Mr. Vampire in 1992, which would be the fifth, I guess.
I did miss out on that one, but I do have that one, and that was also a good film because it kind of reunited the original cast,
I think, and also
included Sandra M, which was not the serious actress at the time. It was more the wacky comedy Sandra. It was like, whoa,
borderline on annoying.
Yeah.
Going back, by the way, to the concept of a child vampire. It worked much better for me in Lam Ching Ying's directorial debut, Vampire vs. Vampire, which had a Dracula-esque vampire as a villain, and that was also a fun film. Kudos to Lam Ching Ying for, you know, he liked the genre and sort of his role that much that he put forth, you know, a creative, fun, fast-paced film, and so Vampire vs. Vampire, totally recommended. Not officially part of the series though, even though I guess there's an AKA for it that makes it like.
Oh yes, there. I think there is.
Fucking seventh or Magikop, I guess, is one of
the AKs. Man, I think I'm just going to sit and watch all those films again. Because the thing is, there's no way that I could go wrong by watching them.
Yeah, you can take it in any order too, because no one has a connection that, which, you know, you can watch the fourth one and not watch the first one because it's not a to-be-continued story, even though it's the reprisal of characters and stuff like that.
Yeah. So, I think it's time for a break.
Hello, I'm Chapman Toe. When I'm not having sex with prostitutes and acting like a right Chapman, I like to listen to Podcast on Fire. My favourite is Kenneth, because I have a weakness for Swedish blondes.
So, for the questions this evening, it's awards season. We just passed the Academy Awards as of this recording. Over in Asia, and in Hong Kong specifically, they're handing out their awards on April 19th, the 28th annual Hong Kong Film Awards. The likes of Ip Man, Redcliffe, Painted Skin, CJ7, and The Way We are sort of the most nominated movies up for awards. And before I hand out the questions, I'm just going to quickly summarize like the Best Picture, Best Director, Best Actor, and Best Actress awards, you know, the big ones. So Best Picture nominations are actually the ones I said, CJ7, Ip Man, Painted Skin, Red Cliff, and The Way We Are. For Best Director, Benny Chan, Connected, An Hoi, The Way We Are, Johnny To, Sparrow, and Wilson Yip for Ip Man. And Best Actor, Nick Jung for The Beast, Stalker, Louis Koo, Run Papa Run, Tony Leung Chiu Hai, Red Cliff. Red Cliff 2 won't be eligible for these awards because it was just released. Simon Yam, Sparrow, and Donnie Yen, Ip Man. Scary Thing, Donnie Yen, nominated for Best Actor. Never know. Best Actress, Bao Ei Jing for The Way We Are. Barbie Hsu for Connected. Karina Lam, Claustrophobia. Prudence Lau, True Women for Sale, which is the Harmony Yao film. I just saw it recently. And Zhao Jun for Painted Skin. And basically my question is, how do you feel about award season? Do you care for the awards system, if you will? And you can look at it in like the world perspective, if you will.
For me, I don't follow it too closely, mainly because it's not through our mainstream of news. Like, obviously for us, we'll have to go out the way to find information on sites like Monkey Peaches or maybe even Wikipedia, but I'm always sort of the person that I'm not anticipating the results. I've always like, oh, I missed the results. Like they might have got posted last week and then I finally get around to it. So I'm usually quite out of the loop when it comes to the awards. Yeah.
You, Michael? Yeah. That's well summed up.
I kind of read about some of the awards where they pop up on news sites and stuff, but I don't really take an active interest in it. I was watching, I was on the computer, but I had the telly on and had the red carpet for the Oscars on, I don't know whether that was. Was that Sunday, Monday,
yeah.
Tuesday?
Yeah, Sunday.
And it was really hard going watching it. I had to mute it after a while because it was just a parade of ass kissing.
Yeah.
And just
four hours of red carpet.
Yeah, well, yeah. Well, I know that, you know, award ceremonies are about, you know, kissing ass because, you know, it's praising people for doing well. But there's just levels of ass kissage. And the Oscars coverage was just, the American Oscars coverage was just...
Who are you wearing?
It was that.
That's the most common question.
But the guy on there, the most sycophantic of them, who had all the major stars, he had Brad Pitt and Angelina Jolie come up. And he started off his thing going about, oh, not only are you like incredibly talented artists, but also you're humanitarians, aren't you? And he just started kissing their ass about how great humanitarians they were. And I was just, oh God, I'm going to puke in a minute. I can't watch any more of this. So all that kind of stuff I'm not really interested in. I mean, maybe back in the day, award ceremonies, like the 50s or something, when you only pretty much saw film stars on TV, on the screen, or in films, this would be a kind of interesting occasion to see them all together and kind of, you know, as themselves.
But, I was about, you know, to say, by the way, how old are you, Michael? You're talking about the 50s.
Oh, yes. Well, you said, just imagining. Because now, when you have people at awards ceremonies, it's like, oh, I've seen Angelina Jolie, Brad Pitt, every fucking where talking about their lives. And I've seen, you know, Kate Winslet in papers and on telly and in interviews and stuff. It's just not interesting. An award ceremony, it's like, oh, fuck off. To show me who wins. Now, in terms of Asian award ceremonies, I'm not really that bothered either. Well, you know, I'm interested in seeing Ip Man already. Mm-hmm. The fact that it's got, like, I don't know, whatever, 8 award nominations, or if it wins, like, you know, a gazillion, that doesn't really make any difference. I'm still interested in seeing it. And at major award ceremonies, it's very rare that you'll get a film pop up in the awards or in nominations and you think, oh, I haven't heard of that before. Because, you know, it's usually popular big budget releases, ones that get heavily reviewed and stuff, that get the award nods. So, on the whole, I'm, it doesn't sway me in any way into purchases. And, you know, I don't really learn anything anyway.
It's actually a good point to bring up there, when you find something that sticks out in the nominations, in the categories that you didn't expect, that you never heard of. It's that's the times when I'm the most interested, if I have, and that also means I have a personal interest in it. I mean, go back to like 2006 when My Name is Fame was released, starring Lau Ching-wan, and he was nominated for like this, I don't know, 6th or 7th time as best actor, and finally he won, which was sort of a well-deserved thing, because it was not a shitty film at all, it was a good performance and a good film, and those are the moments I look for. So I was happy to see Lau Ching-wan being recognized finally. I mean, his work hasn't as such suffered just because he, you know, and earned an award or anything like that, but I was happy to see him up there really also making fun of the fact that he fought off himself as sort of the younger of the male actors, just because all the others have received awards, even though some of them are younger than him. So he greeted like Tony Leung Chiu Wai and Eric Kwok as, you know, uncles. It's sort of a jokey thing. But the awards this year, the only reason I'm interested in it, because usually the Hong Kong Film Awards and any award ceremonies, the choices are really, seems random. It's very much true for Hong Kong that, you know, what did that actor do to deserve anything? He just appeared for 2 minutes and, like, he's best supporting actor. Couldn't they find anyone else? Did a run out of actors? So they had to nominate Tony Leung Chiu Wai for that shitty Lunar New Year film he did. So, but this year I have a personal interest in it because the way we are, very small and Hoi directed, sort of a docudrama, is nominated in a huge number of categories, including Best Director, Best Movie, Actress, Best Newcomer, which is sort of a thing where they should give that award to as a young actor called Juno Leung. They should give that to him because he's good in that film, and not give it to some, you know, randomly pull out anyone who was new that year and give them an award. So, I mean, those are the only times I'm interested. Otherwise, it's just, you know, I don't agree with the choices, and it's not really worth, you know, being up in arms about it, because, as you said, Mike, it doesn't really affect the way you look at a movie you had watched already and the movie you're going to watch. So I don't think I would watch yearly if I had access to the Hong Kong Film Awards, watch the whole thing, you know, red carpet and ceremony. Because it probably is very much the same as the Oscars, albeit probably a bit shorter.
Well, I think, I don't know if it's different. It seems like it might be different for the Hong Kong Film Awards, because I know, you know, some of Jackie Chan's films have won awards, and Ip Man, although they haven't seen it yet. I'm not expecting it to be one of the best acted or intelligent films. Maybe I'm doing it a disservice. But one of the fundamental problems with Western award ceremonies is it's all got to be about, you know, sad, weepy films. It's all about, you know, Nazis and overcoming adversity, kind of, you know. Basically, the speech by Robert Downey Jr. in Tropic Thunder, it's kind of true, about doing, you know, half retard and the full retard.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's award baiting stuff, whereas comedies and action films and things like that just get looked over as being kind of like not worthy enough. So like a film like The Reader, I'll admit I'm not having seen it, but the reviews I've read have said it was quite good. You know, it's been getting 3 stars around the places, and Kate Winslet's supposed to be very good in it. Gets a nod for best film, I think it did, anyway. Ahead of something like The Dark Knight, which is grabbing 4- and 5-star reviews everywhere, and I saw and was a fucking awesome film. Yet the worthy, in inverted commas, you know, film about Nazis and Holocaust or whatever, he's always going to get picked ahead of something, a comic book movie.
Exactly, which is fun to, you know, contrast to Hong Kong. You know, look at pretty much the different genres in the Best Picture nominee: CJ7, Ip Man, Painted Skin, Red Cliff, and The Way We Are. You know, they're diverse enough when compared to each other.
It's nice to see.
The Way We Are, again, I mean, it was a shot on video movie that only played in like festivals. It came out on DVD, and only a few people know it, but it's so fucking good. But for a selected audience still, which I'm glad that the Hong Kong Film Awards picked up on it, because the Hong Kong Film Critics Awards, they usually pick up on anything An Hui does, and did this year as well. But I was surprised it would was acknowledged the way it was, I'm not saying it's going to be the best movie. I very much doubt that, but I would say it has a shot at Best Actress and maybe Best Director.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very Hong Kong movie, and that's the thing I come back to. That's sort of my pet theme with this podcast: do acknowledge the local Hong Kong movie that also looks and feels like a local Hong Kong movie. It's that kind of story. You get the, you know, it's sort of you're there on the streets, sort of tasting the atmosphere. I'm very much glad that it's out there. Even though if you go back to like 1999 and you see like Edison Chen win for Gen Y Cops, then you don't get much encouragement for the Hong Kong Film Awards. But again, he was new. It's an automatic category. Very much automatic. And as me, you and I discussed the Best Newcomer Award a few years ago, and it was between Ye Chao and Fiona Sit, which would be Initial D and Too Young, the movies respectively. Of course Ye Chao wins, and not the actual good actor
yes.
out of the bow. So, you know. So, my second question, and I sort of was inspired by what I heard on one of the Kevin Smith podcasts recently, where they were talking about the kind of movie fan they are now versus then. You know, they are in the late 30s now, and they were talking about how they were in their 20s, kind of film snobbish, and really could really be up in arms about, you know, remakes and different opinions compared to theirs, they will really argue against, and they look back on that thinking, why the fuck did I care? You know, why care about anything like that? And you know, obviously we're not in our late 30s looking back at our late 20s, but were you guys ever if it's not too much of a personal question to ask, were you guys ever that kind of movie fan? That kind of movie fan you see on forums who has to argue their opinion, argue against another opinion, you know, for pages and pages, and they never settle on the fact that, well, good for him that he had a different opinion. I have mine. And it doesn't bother me. So were you ever that kind of viewer, if I may ask?
I think there was a stage when I first got... from Asian cinema, there was probably... I don't know, maybe after my first year or around that time, I was basically the person that was like, America can't make anything good. Like, Asian is supreme. So I was to the point where it's all, you should watch this film, it's good. And I would just deliberately, like, watch it with a negative attitude just because it's not a film from, like, Asia. And basically one day I just kind of thought to myself, that's really silly. Because there's a point where you're watching it and you realise you are watching a really good film, but why am I trying to dislike it?
Why be bothered?
Yeah, it was to the point where it was just like, you're just still wasting your energy on nothing. Like, deliberately causing, like, a friction amongst people just because it's not your type of film, or everyone should follow this type of film. It was just basically to the point is I should really just take my head out my own ass. But yeah, I think there's only really been a brief stage for me because I don't feel I've changed too much. I've probably became more laid back in the ways where I think to myself, like, yeah, everyone doesn't really need to see and appreciate Young and Dangerous films, but if they do, good for them.
Yeah, I was about to say, I mean, being sort of a minority amongst people who like Ekin Cheng movies, and I'm not saying that to be funny. I mean, I think that's a fact in a way, on the internet anyway. So that could have been a point where you could be really up in arms, you know. Yeah, stop bitching about Ekin Cheng, you stupid cunts, you know.
Women from Mars was a good film!
He's doing his best!
yeah, between anger and sadness.
What do you expect? They left him with Michael Wong.
That's a great movie to quote, by the way. Like, Women from Mars, who ever heard of that? I did! I saw it! And it was... how was it, by the way?
It's a real half and half film.
Okay. Where
some bits you're just like, God almighty, and some bits, like, it's more like the later half where it's for them they realise they've stopped being dickheads and they've started changing. And there's no more, like, dialogue, well, scene where they're all standing there with the drawers open crying, like, where is my birdie? Or I think it's, they're either quoting it as their birdie or their tweety, and it's gone missing. And I'm like, oh my god. Yeah.
Yeah. But for me, I've never been that way about movies, but I was for a brief time in my teenage years. Well, not a brief time, maybe a few years. Really, I couldn't stand people's taste in music compared to mine. I just couldn't stand that people couldn't see, like, this kind of music is brain dead. Don't you understand? It's brain dead. And I never got a reply as such. It was just wasted energy, one way energy. Which I sort of realized that, why fuck? It's about individual enjoyment and whatever. So I'm never really that guy on forums, our Asian cinema forums. But there are so many examples of that out there, that people just, I guess, thrive on, I must vent my opinion, I must vent my opinion, oh, he had a conflicting opinion, I must vent that, and it could be constructive initially, but just go out of hand so quickly, and without naming any names, I think people who visit like the Kung Fu Fandom and Asian DVD Guide can pick up like the three or four people that usually are that way. And are borderlining looking down on people's opinions and claiming their opinion is the best. Really being quite nasty about it. I don't like that. But then again, I don't care to argue against that you're being a Nazi with your opinion, grow up. Because that's just my energy wasted. So even those kind of people, they can go on and do whatever they like, and hopefully they'll grow up one day.
Mm-hmm. What about you, Mike?
Well, it's kind of picking up on something you should do. Made me think that Asian films is the kind of hobby that you can sense that some people take up because it's filler and it's a bit different and it's niche. And have the kind of reaction of you might have met people who are like, they love a new band or finding a band, or, you know, a couple of people have spoke about a band in a forum and they picked up on them and they love them. And then when they become famous, you know, they start hating on the fans of the now famous band, mm-hmm. or start disliking the band because they're not like their little discovery anymore.
Exactly.
And I think Asian cinema kind of plays into that as well, that you get some people who love it and get into it because it's not American film and not Hollywood. Mm. So, like, Hollywood is the enemy, you know, it's the stupid tripe that everybody watches. There's never anything good. It's all sequels and comic book heroes. So, you know, I'm watching my little niche films and that makes me slightly superior.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of attitude. I mean, you get some people, I've read on forums before, who were banging on about how English dubs on Asian films are disrespectful and ignorant. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you shouldn't have them. And stuff like that. And basically, it makes you a massive cunt if you like watching English dub films.
That's a well summary of it, indeed. They never say it out loud, but that's exactly what they're saying underneath.
Yeah. And the thing is, though, you know, what, like, Chinese people or people in Korea or Japan don't watch Japanese dub TV or Japanese dub films or DVDs. I mean, don't be ridiculous. Would you call people in China ignorant and, you know, stupid, etc., because they like watching Chinese dubbed versions of films or films in Mandarin? No, I doubt they would.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I absolutely. By the way, I have to track back because when mentioning remakes, actually, quite one of my initial podcasts between us was about remakes, and it wasn't like I was up in arms, but I had a different opinion of remakes then as opposed to now, and I think you had something to do with that, Mike. Sort of opened my eyes to the fact that it's well my own insight was that it's not really worth caring and get up in arms about it, because it's very easy if it's a remake of, you know, an older good film. The older good film is still out there for me, so it's no use to be up in arms about it, and it's bound to happen anyway. So, I mean, that I'm man enough to admit. And I guess that it takes some sort of, in what way I can't say, but some kind of wake-up call, some kind of, you know, an energy from someone else to say to that person who is on the forums and just basically just wow about my opinion. Just takes a wake-up call of some sort, I think. And if that doesn't work, then, you know, good luck in life. And I'm not saying there are people out there that I'm going to dedicate my life, my internet life, to converting people with the kind of people we're talking about, converting them to thinking good thoughts, good clean thoughts, mm-hmm. and be a logical person. But only talking from personal experience, that was my kind of turnaround in terms of, I guess, remakes and stuff. So.
Well, I've said, you know, said a few times, the kind of people act as if remakes are replacing the film that was pre-made, as if, like, you know, Martin Scorsese has departed, so Infernal Affairs doesn't exist anymore. There's only enough room for that one film and that one story, and once it's remade, then, you know, that's the only version around, which is kind of a weird way of looking at it. I mean, I can kind of understand it in some respects, because, you know, I had little pangs of it over the last year or so, reading about the Karate Kid remake. Mm-hmm. Because to me, that's kind of, you know, that's a piece of nostalgia. that's a classic film that I had like a real affection for. And then when you read about, like, you know, Will Smith's son's going to be in it, and there's the remake, and, you know, it's not karate anymore, and start thinking, oh, this is going to suck.
Flying Wing Chun.
Why are you doing this? But then at the end of the day, you know, so what? It's not even, you know, I've still got Karate Kid, which is, I'm sure, is probably going to be a better film. You know, other people can watch their remade shite.
It's not like we're going to change our business, by the way, our business practice. It's not like we're going to change that anyway, so why even bother? Remakes are going to happen. And I mean, in 10 years' time, a remake is going to happen of a movie where we discussed, let's say, 5 years ago.
Yeah.
You know, and it's no use. It will be the same then. We should have the same opinion then.
Mm-hmm.
What were we saying, Mike?
In terms of my personal experience of being a fan, I don't think I've ever had a kind of elitist kind of attitude or felt like, you know, I'm the only one who understands what a great film is and why are other people watching this cast. I mean, maybe I have, but I can't think back to an occasion when I felt like that. You know, I always, you know, I like watching films, and then if other people don't, or they don't, you know, get it, then it doesn't really bother me. For years, my mum's always been ripping on Jackie Chan to try and wind me up. Calling him the ballet dancer. She reckons he doesn't fight, he just dances around in an attempt to wind me up. I have a discussion with her telling him how awesome it is, but I don't get wound up about it or think, you know, I don't call her a knob or anything or waffle her about it. It's just, you know,
here it comes again.
it doesn't really affect me. Yeah, so I was saying about being a movie fan, I don't think I've ever felt that kind of you know, I know best kind of attitude. I've usually been quite kind of, you know, I like it, other people might not, but that's just the way it is.
Which seems like the easiest thing in the world. You know, the easiest, you know, logical thing to insight in the world, the way you just said it. But no, the internet would die if we didn't have the I know best elitist kind of people.
Well, exactly, so it provides an entertainment occasionally. The thing about flame wars, as people tend to call them,
World
is wars. that maybe it's just my inherent laziness, but every now and again I read stuff and it does wind me up a bit when people are being ignorant or are being kind of condescending to people, and it gets on my nerves. But then I think, oh, I'm gonna have to. I've got an angry response going here. I'm gonna have to type something out, and I think, oh, I can't be bothered.
Exactly.
If it was a voice message or something, maybe. But typing it up, I just can't be arsed. And then the other thought crosses my head, mind, which is, if I type something, then they'll type something, then, you know, I'll have to reply to that, and then they'll reply, and then it'll just keep going and going and going, and I just can't bother with that.
That triangle of quote wars. Endless, yeah, I agree. It's not worth it.
What's the point? So I was just thinking, as a fan, though, of martial arts films, I do remember when I was a kid, kind of coming up to my early teens and stuff, I really liked Jean-Claude Van Damme films. And my parents are kind of liberal conservatives, and so they didn't mind me watching, you know, 15s and 18s.
He's gonna go out and kill someone if he watches an 18.
Yeah. Well, I think they understood that, you know, I knew it was a film, and, you know, I could enjoy it without kind of, you know, going nuts. So, I mean, it's not like, you know, they let me sit down and watch 9.5 weeks or anything, which I probably wouldn't have been interested in anyway. But yeah, I used to watch Jean-Claude Van Damme films, and I thought he was the bollocks. I absolutely love Jean-Claude Van Damme. And then when I got older and kind of got into Jackie Chan, that kind of spoilt it for me, because then that opened up a whole world of just intricate, super fast combinations and stunt work and falls. And then when I went back to the Jean-Claude Van Damme, it just seemed so slow and stagey and, you know, Hollywoody. But I just really went off them. I didn't watch any Jean-Claude Van Damme. And I'd watched quite a few Steven Seagal, because my parents were into it as well. And Arnie films. especially Total Recall. but now I'm a bit older, I don't know how exactly, but I've rediscovered my appreciation for those kind of cheesy Hollywood action films with Arnie, Jean-Claude, and Steven Seagal. Well, Steven Seagal less, because he seems like a dick. But the other two particularly, just kind of... I don't know what it is, but I've rediscovered an enjoyment of cheesy action films featuring those guys.
Mm-hmm. I think that's a process. I think that's a process many go through, and it's a very healthy process, I think, and a natural one. You know, so it makes me happy to hear you say that you're so you're back in those boots in a way.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's kind of like, you know, it's when you find a new thing. When I discovered Jackie Chan films after watching Police Story 2, and then when I had my kind of second awakening, when I really got into Asian films again, in when I was about, you know, 19 or 20, mm-hmm. It kind of, you know, it was the new thing, and I just wanted more. I wanted more super fast. I wanted bigger stunts. And so it was just, you know, a constant burst of those kind of films. And now I've seen a good chunk of the cream of it. It's kind of almost full circle back to, you know, I'm more appreciative of punch and block films and sword plays and kind of Hollywood martial arts films. All of them give me something a bit different.
What would be like, just as an aside, what would be like your favorite Van Damme movies? Is like the period of Kickboxer, Bloodsport, or a little bit into the 90s? You like that stuff more?
Yeah, well, I really like Bloodsport. And I remember, I haven't seen it for young, so I can't really remember the film, but I remember loving Kickboxer. Yeah, I liked AWOL as well. That's a good one. I started liking him less, actually, like later on when we got to Hard Target and stuff like that. Didn't quite like that as much. In terms of Schwarzenegger, I just love Arnie films. The action in Arnold Schwarzenegger films is awesome. That is a man who knows how to fight. You know, he might not have any skills, kind of, you know, technical ability in martial arts or anything like that, but when he fights, he really looks like he's cracking somebody's fucking skull.
Feel the impact of Arnie beating people up. Would this be the movies that are, you know, less Predator and Total Recall and more Commando?
Yeah, Commando, Raw Deal.
Yeah.
Those are some good films.
Predator and Total Recall are kind of like, that's actual, you know, classic movies that will never grow old. You know, It's not based on, like, let's see Arnie fight in Predator and Total Recall. So it's kind of a different beast there compared to the, like...
Running Man.
Yeah, exactly.
That's another film I love as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It gets me in a nostalgia mood and no need to be a dick about the opinions you have of.
There you go, that's a nice summary of the conversation. Don't be a dick about your opinions.
So I think that wraps us up for another Podcast on Fire. Have we got any little plugs for the people out there? Ken?
In general, no. I'll just mention SoGoodReviews.com and our YouTube channel, and I'll promise you we'll do more reviews like The Forbidden Legend, Sex and Chopsticks, because that was an instant smash with both the readers and the viewers and the listeners on YouTube. They love that. And I can tell you the sequel to Forbidden Legend, Sex and Chopsticks is coming in March. Hopefully a DVD, April or something like that. So
in 3D?
Actually, they haven't said that, but maybe if they do a third one, you know, Forbidden Legend, Sex and Chopsticks 3D. But they're doing a Sex and Zen 3D, though.
Anyway, that's kind of why I mentioned it.
Yeah, so I'll probably take that on. So, SoGoodReviews.com and our YouTube channel. Check it out.
Mike?
Well, I'm going to do a shout out for a DVD release, well, a movie release, rather than a kind of, you know, a link to anything. Because I was chatting to a guy called Joey, who runs Terracotta Media, who are UK-based DVD label. doing Asian films. They've just started. And he's a dead nice bloke. I had a good chat to him. And so just thought I'd mention Hansel and Gretel, which is a Korean horror film.
Right.
Based on the fairy tale, I think. I don't really haven't watched it yet. But it's his company is responsible for releasing that.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, always nice to support young upstart kind of people, you know, companies that are interested in Asian film, because there isn't a lot of them in the UK, really. I mean, apart from Cine Asia and the occasional film coming out, you know, highbrow kind of 50s Japanese masterpiece kind of, mm-hmm. Eureka or somebody like that. There's not a lot of the kind of modern Asian films, especially Korean. Yeah, so it's good to
smaller Korean films. I mean, it's not like it's in the division of the good, the bad, and the weird. This one, so kudos for bringing something not in the mainstream mind of people.
So check that out. If it's, I think it's on DVD. I think it's getting a bit theatrical release as well in Britain, kind of small scale. So either at the cinema or on DVD. Grab that one.
Awesome. For me, just running off the usual ones. Visit the forum, podcastonfire.com/forum. We've got the group on Facebook, just putting Podcast on Fire into the search engine. And if you go onto our website now, podcastonfire.com, obviously, and there should be our Jet Li survey. This is just us doing some preparation for a future episode, so if you have a few minutes, just have a look and tick up the couple boxes on your favourite Jet Li movies. You'll be helping us out.
And watch out for more Japan on Fire coming soon.
Yes, definitely coming soon.
Pinky Violence and Chambara.
Mm-hmm. So I've been your host for this evening. I'm Stuart Sutherland.
Kenneth Wilson.
Mike.
And we'll catch you next time.
If he doesn't fight, he just dances around in an attempt to wind me up. I don't, you know, I have a discussion with telling him how awesome it is, but I don't get wound up about it or think, you know, I don't call her a knob or anything or talk to her about it. It's just, you know,
you're a cunt again.
it doesn't really affect me. No, hang on a second.
Good lord, no.
But this affects you.
I'm doing podcasting. Okay, speak to a bit, Mike. Sorry about that.
No problem.
It would bother us if, like, if it would take like 5 minutes for you to. Okay, see you. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay, yeah.
No, I've done that.
Yeah,
it's in the basket.
Tomorrow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The heating's fine.
Let me check. Yep. Okay, bye. Yep.
Buy milk.
Bye.
She understands what POF's all about. What I say is podcast. I understand, Mike. See ya.
And that's not code.
That's like
sorted.
It is.
Yep, exactly.